Wait, I've got stuff here. Bible. I told you, and you came back. In Unity, we celebrate Christmas and Easter, but we're not obsessed with virgin birth or death on the cross or even resurrection. Our emphasis is on the teachings of Jesus and the role model of Jesus. So I promised you some of Jesus' greatest hits over the next few weeks. And they are conveniently compiled in the Sermon on the Mount. So we'll be looking at parts of that, actually most of it. What we call the Sermon on the Mount is in the book of Matthew, chapters 5, 6, and 7. A lot of the same teachings are in Luke. It's kind of an abridged version in Luke, sometimes called the Sermon on the Plain. But you know, Sermon on the Mount and Sermon on the Plain are not titles in the Bible. They're just names that have been given to these passages over the years. Most Bible scholars do not think for a minute that there was a day when Jesus stood up and said all these things at once. It's a device that the writer of Matthew used to combine all sorts of teachings and sayings from Jesus. And it works really well. But we probably don't have an accurate picture even for the device. Because when I hear Sermon on the Mount, I picture Jesus standing about halfway up a hill, speaking to the multitudes below with great projection. I always worried about people not being able to hear him. You remember that scene from Monty Python's Life of Brian? Yeah, where these two scruffy first century guys are on the edge of the crowd saying, "Blessed are the cheesemakers?" But so listen to how Matthew sets this scene. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain. And after he sat down, his disciples came to him. He's not teaching the crowd. He left the crowd, went up the mountain. There are any number of times that Jesus leaves the crowd and goes up a hill or a mountain. It represents rising in consciousness, aligning with the divine. He goes away for a while and strengthens and centers himself. And then he comes down into the crowd to teach. In this case, he retreats from the crowd and sits down and is joined by the disciples. Matthew was writing for a Jewish audience, and in their minds, a rabbi would sit to instruct his students, who literally sat around his feet. So for Matthew, this visual image adds to Jesus' prestige. And every great spiritual teacher teaches on two levels: the masses and the select students. I mean, even today, if you think of big name speakers, Wayne Dyer maybe, Byron Katie, they write books, they make PBS specials, but they also give private coaching to people who pay big bucks. So here is Jesus with his VIP clients. The Sermon on the Mount was private coaching. It's inside stuff. It's the advanced lessons. And whenever I talk about the Sermon on the Mount, I have to give credit to my friend Ed Townley, the Unity minister in Connecticut, and his wonderful book called The Secret According to Jesus, which is hard to get. But he takes apart the Sermon on the Mount line by line. Ed is also the one who taught me how to look at the Wizard of Oz. I've learned a lot from him. Yeah. So we know from the first sentence in Matthew chapter 5 that we are in the presence of a great teacher, and we're about to hear his deepest teachings. Then he began to speak, and he taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." It's the Beatitudes, right off the bat. Again, the name Beatitudes is not in the Bible. It has been given to this list of 9 blessings. I don't know even what to call them. What is a beatitude? When you look it up, it's self-referential. The dictionary says a beatitude is a statement from the Sermon on the Mount. Thank you. So think of the word beatific. It means a state of bliss. Maybe these are statements of bliss delivered from the highest consciousness. And they're not about what to do, but how to be. Attitudes to hold. Eric Butterworth called them the Beatitudes. And they were designed to shake up your thinking about how life works. You have to bend your mind around some of them. So you know the Jesus Seminar, 75 theologians and scholars who met years ago. They still meet. But years ago, they studied all the words of Jesus, and they voted on what they thought Jesus really said and probably didn't say. And then they issued their own translation of the five Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and the Gospel of Thomas, which was not discovered until 1945 in Egypt, but may have been written before all the others. So they translated all that, and their language for Jesus was updated to the point of being shocking, because Jesus was shocking. And they translate this, "Congratulations to the poor in spirit." And they go on, "Congratulations to those who mourn. Congratulations to the meek." But this was Jesus' lead, and it did get the disciples' attention. So let's look at these. "Congratulations to the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." We may not be sure what poor in spirit means, but it doesn't sound good. The poor in spirit, if you're poor in spirit, you don't yet realize there is a higher dimension to life than striving for material things. The rich can be poor in spirit if they are attached to things. The poor are poor in spirit if they are focused on their lack of things. Wanting a deeper experience of life is the first step toward the kingdom of heaven. So you're blessed, congratulations, when you recognize that you're poor in spirit, when you realize there is more to life and you want it. Congratulations for your divine restlessness. You are awakening from the illusion of material success and elevating your consciousness. And the kingdom of heaven is divine consciousness. It's a higher dimension of spirit that is available to us. And it is here in a state of, well, bliss. The Greek word for heaven means expansion. So heaven is knowing the truth of who you are and living within this ocean of unconditional love and intelligence and grace we call God. And he said, theirs is the kingdom of heaven, which means success is assured once your journey begins. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Again, cognitive dissonance. If you're mourning some loss, you might appreciate being comforted, but you probably don't feel particularly blessed by the situation, much less congratulations. But remember, you're on a spiritual journey. You've started by realizing you're poor in spirit. You want more of spirit. And spiritual transformation means letting go of what's familiar. You can't change your life without saying goodbye to the life you've had, at least parts of it. And you might miss them and mourn them and grieve for them. Someone mentioned to me the other day, and this happens all the time, that their old friends don't click anymore. And that is a recurring event as you grow and change spiritually. And it can be lonely when you are no longer on the same wavelength with your old friends and you don't yet have new ones. You might mourn them. You might mourn habits that you give up. Cigarettes, food, might have been really close friends. You might miss the certainty of your old beliefs. But all this releasing is making way for something better. The only way to avoid grief is never to let go of anything. And that forecloses spiritual growth. So if you want transformation, there's going to have to be change. And change means loss at first. But we're losing limitations. We're losing our old ideas of self. So we are comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. So you see by now, the Beatitudes are not about right and wrong. They're not commandments. They're about what limits our lives or enhances our lives. They're about living from divine consciousness, creating the kingdom of heaven among us. So in the first two, we begin the spiritual journey from dissatisfaction. There's got to be more to life. Maybe you're reluctant to let go of what's familiar. You are now leaving your comfort zone. And then in this third one, to be meek is not being weak, it's being surrendered. And that's the next step. A great power can carry us on this journey. We have to set aside our priorities and accept guidance. Sometimes we're exhausted from trying to conquer the world on our own power. But once we surrender, we inherit the earth. Inherit is to receive without effort. It just becomes yours. You inherit everything. Good is your birthright when you surrender to it. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be fulfilled. Righteousness does not mean living a perfect life. It's being right with God. I hate to say it that way. It's seeing rightly, understanding God is all there is, and surrendering to the one presence and power in the universe. We might experience grief when we let go of what no longer serves us. But letting go can also become addictive. Some people, you know, skip from one thing to another and never spend much time anywhere. And, ooh, isn't that interesting? Oh, something shiny. So you've heard me say before, don't be a spiritual dabbler. Of course you explore, but pick a path and go deep with it. It is easy to keep wandering in the wilderness looking for new scenery. It's a pack up and move mentality. And while curiosity is a good thing, we can't undertake spiritual transformation as a hobby in our spare time. We have to hunger and thirst enough to seek deeper understanding, to seek satisfaction. And it's waiting for us. We will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. In our society now, to have mercy is to let someone off the hook. They don't have to experience the full consequences of their actions, even though we have judged them to be wrong. To be merciful is compassion, and there's no judgment in compassion. It's an attitude of oneness. We all make mistakes. We all have the same fears. When we see someone acting out, it could easily be us. We love them anyway. We see the Christ in them. Shakespeare said, "Mercy is twice blessed. It blesses the one who gives mercy as well as the one who receives it." And then, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." We don't get to judge who is pure in heart. Jesus said, "By their fruits you will know them." You see the results in their lives. You feel their energy. And we also don't have to become pure in heart. Our hearts are already pure. Our thoughts are the problem. Good and bad, black and white, faith and fear, love and lust. And our challenge is to center ourselves in our own pure heart energy. That is where we see God. "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God." This is about being peace. We are already children of God. As we feel and express that, everything around us becomes more peaceful because of our presence. Ed Townley offers this affirmation: "Centered in the loving energy of the Christ within, I find peace and I extend peace to everyone I meet." "Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." For too long, this has been interpreted to mean life may be torture, but you'll get your reward in the sweet by and by. But Jesus clearly said, we create heaven right here in these bodies. He said, the kingdom is at hand, the kingdom is among you, the kingdom is within you. This is from the Gospel of Thomas. Jesus said, if those who lead you say to you, see, the kingdom is in heaven, then the birds of heaven will go there before you. If they say to you, it is in the sea, then the fish will go before you. But the kingdom of heaven is within you, and it is outside of you. When you know yourselves, then you will be known, and you will know that you are the sons of the living Father. But if you do not know yourselves, then you are in poverty, and you are the poverty. The kingdom of heaven is a state of consciousness, and it is available to anyone, anytime. It is the awareness of our own divinity when you know yourself. When we see people we think are persecuted, we usually assume they are suffering and in pain, but that's our limited human perspective. Anyone who is able to live in non-resistance and non-judgment is in heaven, no matter what is happening to them. It's a state of consciousness. When we know our oneness with the unconditional love of God, the world has no power over us. And then finally, blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For in the same way, they persecuted the prophets who were before you. The Gospels were written at a time... Well, no, just stay with me. You know the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, were written decades after Jesus had come and gone. And they were written at a time when these new Christians were increasingly being persecuted. So that particular beatitude sounds to me more like a pep talk from Matthew than an actual saying of Jesus. But it is still useful to us. And again, it doesn't mean tough it out and you'll be rewarded when you die. Taking a new spiritual path can cause conflict with the world, with the people we know, the way things are done, even the self we used to be. And Jesus is a great example of that. His hometown rejected him. His family thought he was crazy to pursue this ministry thing. He was disapproved of by the good people because he hung out with tax collectors and prostitutes. And eventually he was crucified because he was so misunderstood. But we see now all of that was a sign Jesus was doing exactly what he came here to do. And when we follow our paths, when we do our spiritual jobs, the reward is living now in a consciousness of love, compassion, and peace. That's the kingdom of heaven. We might be judged as foolish, but we don't need for others to understand our spiritual choices. Our reward is the shift going on within us, the higher level of living, the kingdom of heaven. So the whole Sermon on the Mount begins with Jesus mapping out the spiritual journey using the Beatitudes. It starts with divine restlessness and takes us out of our comfort zone. We have to surrender to a higher power and commit to spiritual transformation. We give up judgments and attachments and shift our consciousness to compassion and peace. Taking this new path can cause conflict with the world as it did for Jesus. And that's a theme throughout his teachings. Don't expect this path will always be easy or fun. Jesus warned this path can require turning away from family, friends, public opinion, and material attachments. And it's all good. I read in the Beatitudes a reminder that we are worthy even more than we think. The things that you think might be wrong with you or make you feel inferior are just the opposite. You are blessed when you feel poor in spirit, when you mourn, when you feel persecuted, when you hunger and thirst for more. All that is a necessary part of your spiritual development. You are right on track. So congratulations. Let's take these thoughts into meditation. When we meditate, we simply relax. Let the chair support you. You might want to close your eyes and start with a deep breath. The kingdom of heaven is within you. So So as you turn within, center yourself on the loving energy of the Christ within. Feel a joyful infusion of the Holy Spirit. That is your creative energy. Just remain centered and focus on your spiritual possibilities. Release any judgment of self or others. And feel the love of God moving through you. I feel peace and express it in my life. I claim for myself the kingdom of heaven. And I ask to discover my role in bringing that kingdom into full expression on the earth. In these moments, know that your spiritual journey is on the right track, even when it's not fun. Once you know that there is more to life than a physical body and acquiring things, you have taken the first step toward heaven. Our lesson on earth is to integrate the physical experience with spiritual consciousness. And so in these moments, just feel the love within guiding you and reassuring you that all is well. And so, Amen.